This is special coverage from WBUR in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Over 90% of Americans support the war on terror. But what does the rest of the world think? In a recent international Gallup poll, 73% of people polled in France supported U.S. military action in Afghanistan. In Russia, only 39% approved of U.S. strikes. In Greece, 81% disapproved. This hour, we go beyond the numbers and talk with journalists around the globe about the response in their countries to the war on terror. Earlier today, I spoke with François Moreau, editor of the French National Geographic magazine in Paris. I asked what he thought about Gallup poll numbers showing high support in France for the U.S. war effort in Afghanistan.
Well, I'm surprised and not surprised. People were very shocked. You know, you probably more than here in the United States think, oh, I always remember what I was doing, you know, November the 22nd of 1963 or whatever. I think all of us will remember what they were doing on September 11th, 2001. And a lot of people were absolutely shocked to see what happened. And since we already in France had problem with terrorism from Middle East for years, not the same, you know, level, but everything is so big in America anyway. And so I think people, were very shocked, even if a lot of French people are very reluctant towards the United States in many ways.
Our impression, of course, François, is always that the French are skeptical and dubious about the United States, but you say this event was of such a scale that it broke through that skepticism.
Yeah, exactly, yes, because people were absolutely deeply shocked with what they saw and what was the reason for that. So afterwards, you had a huge discussions between a lot of people, intellectuals and others, saying the United States, they deserved it. And a lot of people were shocked, saying we don't care about whether it's the United States or another Western nation. It's shocking anyway.
And so did you find that the intellectuals were more along the line that the U.S. deserved it and ordinary people were not so in agreement?
I would say it's shared. A lot of intellectuals are saying that the United States not deserve it. It's not the way they would say it. But and a lot of intellectuals say that it's always our thing to criticize the United States, and in such dramatic circumstances, we should support them without any, you know, restrictions.
Those who said that the United States deserved it, what was their reasoning, François?
It's saying that the United States have got a huge responsibility considering the fact that they are now the only superpower. They are not interested that much in what's going on outside their world. Not even, you know, in very odd countries such as Afghanistan, but even in Europe or Africa or whatever. And considering the fact that they got such a major central role within the world, the fact that they sort of despise the rest of the world in some ways, they didn't take into account what was going on in Middle East and other regions of the world.
And so the view was that came back to bite the United States.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that they deserve it in the sense of really they deserve it. But they should have taken in account what was going on in the world. That is the main argument.
And François, what have the French made of the United States' response to 9/11? It's been a large response so far, largely focused on Afghanistan, but the U.S. has asked for support from many nations. What's the sentiment you see there about how the U.S. has responded to these attacks?
Well, first of all, for me, to my very humble personal level, I was very surprised by the fact that the U.S. responded in a very reasonable and, you know, it wasn't hitting immediately and, you know, so I was very surprised the fact that the United States thought, okay, let's do things. It's awful what we've been through, but let's take into account every, you know, aspect of it. A lot of French people were completely behind that sort of response because it was very well done. I mean, there's no discussion about that, really.
And, of course, there are French troops now in Afghanistan. I think you have two or 300 in Mazar-e-Sharif already.
Yeah, and I think it's the second or third biggest contribution after the English, I think. And I think a lot of French people thought it was the only response anyway. I mean, what else could you do? You had to get rid of this threat. And there was those discussions about civilian casualties and so on. At the same time, people were saying that fighting a war is fighting a war. It's not a piece of cake. Mm. But I think majorly the French people were really behind the United States. The fact that the French could be sometimes in such circumstances more supportive in some ways, and they are not as much because there's something we have and we have to take into account is the fact that we got the biggest Muslim population in Europe and per head the biggest Muslim population in Western world because we got 5 million Muslims as much as you in the United States, but you have 62 million inhabitants and you have 270 million.
Right. So you have to take that into account.
Yeah,
sure.
you can't just say, yeah, get rid of those bastards or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's much more sophisticated and subtle than that.
Mm-hmm. And, Francois, looking ahead, when President Bush talks about the war on terror being a perpetual kind of war, long-term, much more to come, do you think the United States can count on the French to remain supportive, or what will determine whether or not France remains supportive?
Plus, we got presidential elections and general elections in a few months, so things will change little.
Mm-hmm.
Some French people think that the French should be much more involved in that war than they are at the moment, thinking that it's maybe the war of the future. If you, U.S., get rid of Bin Laden, there will be other people behind.
Yeah.
And if it takes long time, I think, the French would be supportive because, one more time, we've been suffering of that, not in the same scale, but we've been suffering of that for years now.
And, Francois, I have to ask you, with you've just had this week the introduction of the new currency, the euro, in France and all over Europe. Has that pushed the war on terrorism off the front page? Is it still very much on French people's mind, or is it receding now?
No, it is. The euro is on the front page now. That's true.
In the wake of that, do you think that the war on terror will make its way back onto the front page, or are French people ready to move beyond that now?
If things are going on like now, which means that mainly the U.S. and Afghan and allied forces get rid of Bin Laden, if they find him, that's it. I think it will be out from the front pages up to the moment there's another terror attack or whatever. I mean, the euro is really the thing at the moment, but if ever things evolve linked to the terrorism in the next few weeks, it will be back on the front pages without any doubt.
François Moreau is editor of the French National Geographic magazine in Paris. We're talking tonight about the world's response to the U.S. war on terrorism. Regina Zappa joins us now from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. She's worked as foreign news editor at the Jornal do Brasil, one of the leading national newspapers in Brazil, and she's author of Chico Buarque para Todos, a biography of the acclaimed musician Chico Buarque de Holanda. Good evening and hi, Regina Zappa.
Tom, how are you doing?
We're doing very well. Thanks for joining us. Also with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is our very own special coverage news analyst, Jack Beattie, a senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Hello,
listeners,
Jack.
and our listeners, what have you heard from friends and relatives living abroad about how America is perceived post-September 11th? What have you seen in your travels outside the United States? You can join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Regina, you just heard us talking with François Moreau, and we also have guests coming up from Africa, from Russia, from Canada. We're trying to get under the surface tonight and hear what people around the world think of all the events that have taken place around terror since September 11th. How is it all going down in Brazil? What's the view?
Well, let me tell you from the beginning, I think the first reaction of people in Brazil was of disbelief. People could not believe that that was really happening to such a superpower as the United States, and people could not believe that the country could be that vulnerable. And I guess immediately after this disbelief feeling, people were very shocked and concerned about, all the people who were in the building.
Sure.
About, the whole attack. And that subject was the subject of all conversations for many, many weeks in Brazil. It was the headlines of all the newspapers. I mean, the whole page of the newspapers all over Brazil.
Regina, did you have the full television coverage there, too?
Oh, yes. We had
the images of the towers coming down.
Oh, yeah. We saw that live, you know, and people could not believe they were seeing that. And especially, you know, in Brazil, people are very close to the American culture and American way of life and all that, because we are, especially from middle class up, people travel a lot to the United States, more than to Europe now, and also because it's less expensive to travel to the United States.
So there was sympathy. There was sympathy and shared grief in the beginning,
yes.
And then how has everything unfolded since then, Regina? What, since the war began, what's the Brazilian view?
Yeah. Well, then after that, I mean, after this first feeling of shock and concern and sympathy, when the bombings of Afghanistan started, the feeling started to not to change, but you started to see some criticism. And from people, from the press, about how do you solve this? This is not, people would say that this is not a war, a normal war, that you can go and attack a country. This is something else. This is like something that intelligence should be working on. And to attack a country is a lot different. And a lot of people thought that that wouldn't solve the problem. The problem is much deeper than that. That would be just some kind of a way to show a reaction that could be not so effective, and also because a lot of innocent people would be getting killed.
Right.
So you had mixed feelings in Brazil after, you know, the bombing started in Afghanistan.
Regina, there was a lot of skepticism in the United States, too, in the early days, but then the war in Afghanistan seemed to go so well, so effectively, even though Osama bin Laden has not been caught, but there's a sense here of a kind of victory, far from complete, that things have gone pretty well. Do Brazilians share that view of how the war's gone?
Well, I don't know what you mean by pretty well, if it means like that the government in Afghanistan was overthrown.
There's a peace.
I don't think many people had any sympathy for that kind of repressive government. But at the same time, people sort of question if that is going to be really effective, and especially after you see that, you know, one person can be responsible for an attack, like when we heard about the man who went into this airplane with the bomb in his shoes.
Yeah.
And so I think people are sort of skeptical about that, and the not only about if the results were fine in Afghanistan, but was it really necessary to do that? Was there another way? A lot of people were killed. I mean, if we know that a lot of people were killed in the United States, but is that the right way to respond? That was some kind of doubt here.
And what about overall respect for the United States since 9/11? It's been a very dramatic season. Has Brazilian respect for the United States grown, diminished, stayed about the same? What do Brazilians think of Americans' kind of superpower policing the world posture, especially since 9/11?
Yeah, well, let me go back a little further down and remind you about what Brazilians felt about America or the American government in the 60s or the 70s, when there was a lot of anti-American feeling in Brazil, especially because of the military regimes in South America that were supported by the United States government. And then after that, I guess after the 80s, this anti-American feeling started going down. And then at this point, there was a lot of sympathy after the attack. I mean, people were... I didn't hear anybody being critical about the United States at that moment. Everybody was really concerned and really shocked and really had a lot of sympathy for that.
Regina, hold the thought. We've got to take a short break here. We're talking with Regina Zappa in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and with journalists all around the globe, including our own in the studios of Vermont Public Radio, Jack Beatty. We're talking about the worldview of the war on terror. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. What are you hearing from your cousins abroad? I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight, taking the pulse, really, of the worldview of the war on terror. We're joined right now by our own Jack Beatty and from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, author and journalist Regina Zappa. Regina, we've just got time for one more question. What do you think, looking forward, will be the determining factor about whether or not Brazilian public sentiment stays in tune with the United States as this war on terror goes forward?
Well, Tom, I think that a lot of people are hoping that this tragic event, you know, all these things that happened in the United States would serve as a means of people to rethink about everything that's going, that's happening in the world, you know, all the differences and the economic policies that affected so many countries, like, for instance, Argentina, mm-hmm. that is a major concern in Brazil now, and it's our headlines at this moment, not the war anymore, because it's a neighbor that's going into
really in trouble.
A lot of trouble, yes. So I think that people are hoping that this will lead countries, especially the United States as a superpower, to think about its external relations and how things could be done in a different way, how things could be solved, for instance, in the Middle East with the support of the United States, like for a peaceful result of the conflict there,
mm-hmm.
and then all over the world, you know, not to forget countries in Africa, countries in South America, in Latin America, in Asia, and maybe act more as a superpower in a way that could be more supportive of local economies and less centered only in its own reality.
Regina, it's so good of you to join us tonight. It's wonderful to hear your voice. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
Regina Zappa is journalist and author based in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Jack Beatty, we've heard here from France and Brazil. There's a big variety of opinion around the world, and we'll hear more of it tonight. Your first thoughts?
Well, I'm struck by something Regina said that we could all say. She said people in Brazil could not believe that a superpower could be that vulnerable. And I almost heard in her reaction and also in that of Francois a feeling of, well, my gosh, if this could happen to them,
right.
Imagine what could happen to us. Just a feeling of shared vulnerability and also maybe even a feeling of, well, we may not be superpowers, but these things don't happen to us either. So that a kind of relief that
they're not in our shoes.
Yes, they're not in our shoes. not that they put it that way, but
right.
And I was surprised to hear. I didn't realize that there was this much support in France. I had the opposite impression, just based on nothing more than, you know, cliches about the French.
Well, but, it's a Gallup poll. Who knows? But the numbers, interestingly, are just the reverse in Greece, where 81% were disapproving of the U.S. war effort. So there's a range for you.
Yeah, I don't know what the Greece thing would mean at all.
Well, they've got their own history with the United States. Listeners, do you hear enough of what other peoples think about the U.S. and the world? Do you hear more than enough? How much international support should the United States expect? How much does it need? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're going to turn to Africa now. Gwen Lister is editor of The Namibian in Windhoek, Namibia, in the southwest corner of Africa. When we spoke earlier today, I asked her how Namibia views the U.S. response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
I think it's been characterized by kind of mixed feelings. When the September 11 bombings first occurred, I think generally speaking, there was incredible shock and horror. Let's face it, everywhere in the world, people were mm-hmm. absolutely astounded. This couldn't really be happening. I mean, even if I speak for myself, just watching the TV screen and seeing it happen live was the most unbelievable thing. Mm. So initially, the reaction was one of great shock and indeed sympathy. But it wasn't long after that where people began to sort of basically blame the U.S. And they said, well, the chickens have finally come home to roost. America has neglected the rest of the world for too long. And if they haven't neglected it, they've been supporting dictatorial regimes in various parts of the world, especially as far as Namibians were concerned. They feel, I think, deep down that, of course, the U.S. government maintained, if you like, South Africa's intransigence on keeping Namibia as a colony for so many years and not allowing United Nations elections in this country.
During Namibia's independence struggle.
That's right. And I think a lot of Namibians actually blamed the American, blamed the Western powers for kind of helping the apartheid South African regime kind of keep its power here in Namibia for so many years, longer than it should have.
Gwen, we see in the reports today that Nelson Mandela in your neighboring South Africa has backed away from his unconditional support of the war in Afghanistan, saying his original views, that is, unconditional support, may have been one-sided and overstated. It sounds as though you're describing some of the same sentiment around Africa.
This seems to be sort of fairly, I would say, indicative of a lot of the countries, at least that I've come into contact with in the subcontinent of Africa. I know an American citizen who is living here said to me that he had never realized until post-September 11 how much the rest of the world hated the American administration, not specifically Americans themselves, but he just didn't realize how bad things were.
Take us deeper into that. You said people feel like the chickens are coming home to roost. You described what some of that is about, but is there something in the American posture or attitude here that's grating on people beyond policy?
Well, I think, again, there's a feeling that the American administration, and I must be specific here that we're referring to various American governments, and I think they do believe that really Americans don't really care about what's happening or making the world safe for democracy, put it that way, as they seem to think they are doing. And again, people, even Namibians, fairly high rate of illiteracy, but they're fairly highly politicized, know what is happening in the rest of the world. And I think they feel that in America, that sort of same feeling is not mirrored. We find here that a lot of Namibians are very much interested in what is happening around the world. They feel, again, that Americans just aren't as interested in what is happening in countries they know nothing about. They also do point to a number of the world's sort of undemocratic regimes that the Americans have supported. And they refer to even a group such as Jonas Savimbi's UNITA operating in Angola, of course, as just one of those examples that between them, the South African former apartheid regime, that is, and the Americans, certainly gave or made Savimbi what he is today. And, of course, the UN have today implemented sanctions against the UNITA movement.
So, Gwen, when Namibians and perhaps other Africans, Southern Africans, hear President George W. Bush talk about a perpetual war on terror, what does that mean to them?
Well, I think, again, they're looking at that and they're saying, well, that is what America really have been doing in so many cases in the past. They've been supporting regimes that do perpetuate terror. They've supported the apartheid regime, which, of course, kept racial inequality in existence for so many decades in South Africa. They've supported Savimbi in Angola. They've supported people like Mobutu in the Congo and so on. And now they're turning around and pretending they're on the side of the good and not evil. And, you know, a lot of Namibians are saying, well, that's not true. They see a lot of double standards, if you like, in the Bush administration's posture on Afghanistan as well.
But post 9/11, many Americans have found a certain clarity in the world. The attacks were brutal and deadly. Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden appear to have planned and supported them. And that looks like, the administration has often said, a very stark example of good and evil. Is even that dichotomy not so clear in Namibia?
Generally speaking, there would be absolute agreement that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda are probably classified as a terrorist movement. I don't think too many Namibians would take issue with that. But whether they actually feel that the American sort of carpet bombing of Afghanistan was justified in the wake of that is quite another matter entirely. I think they felt, well, if you had to go after anyone, then go after Osama bin Laden. But what did the rest of the Afghan people have to do with it? And I think there's a lot of sympathy, if you like, for what has been happening in Afghanistan. Well, they hold no truck with someone like Osama bin Laden. But if you have to look at who's the bad and who's the evil one, they'll probably point to George Bush rather than to Osama bin Laden at the end of the day.
George Bush as the good in this case.
No, meaning that he's done worse in the world than Osama has done. And this would be the way most Namibians, rightly or wrongly, look at it.
Wow, that's very stark. The United States has talked about taking the war on terrorism into Somalia. Any discussion you've heard in Namibia or elsewhere in Africa about that possibility?
The big question being asked around here is, if the U.S. administration don't get Osama bin Laden. They've got a bit of egg on their face because they've pretty much, as I say, raised a lot of Afghanistan and they haven't got him. What are they going to do next? Because they kind of lose faith if they, after all, he's the one they're really after.
Gwen, you've painted a fairly bleak picture from an American perspective of how Namibians perceive the United States' role in the world. Looking forward, how would Namibians like to see the U.S. acting as a global power that would bring them more favor and support?
I wouldn't say it's just total gloom and doom as far as Namibians are concerned, but I think they feel that they should be doing more through the United Nations, that when it suits the U.S. administration, they act alone. They don't act in concert with the world body. So I think that's one of the aspects that Namibians would emphasize they'd like to see. And, of course, probably being more consistent as far as their policy towards human rights is concerned and if you like, applying that policy equally to both their enemies and their so-called friends.
Gwen, finally, how is the war in Afghanistan, the war on terror, playing in your newspaper?
It often gets onto our front page, depending on what the latest developments are. And, of course, like just about every other newspaper in the world, on September or post-September 11, our local news was relegated to page 3, and, of course, that took over. And, of course, probably what most Namibians are worrying about right now are the economic impact of what's happening. You know, the rand to the dollar exchange is very worrying at the moment. We're going to have to pay more and more for imports. Really, what Namibians are thinking is that the economic impact eventually is probably going to be very serious indeed on us and other countries in the region.
Gwen Lister is the editor of The Namibian. She spoke to us from Windhoek, Namibia. Maura Reynolds is a reporter with the Los Angeles Times in Moscow. I asked her if there was a contrast between Moscow's official position on the war in Afghanistan and what the Russian people were thinking and saying.
Not very much. The official view, of course, is that it's a war on terrorism, and Russia's got its own problems with what it calls terrorism in Chechnya. And so the official government position wholeheartedly supports the United States' right to find the terrorists who carried out the attacks on September 11th. The Russian people, by and large, go along with that, but one thing that they will express that the government will not express in public is the flip side of that, which is sort of suspicion of American motives. You must realize that, you know, Russia is not particularly happy about having America with a military presence in its backyard. And as many other countries around the world, when the United States intervenes with tanks and soldiers, many people wonder whether it's some expression of imperialism or empire or even just being a global policeman. And those feelings are very strong in Russia. So as much as Russians recognize the right of the United States to retaliate for the terrorist attacks and to try to bring to justice those who conducted them, there is this lingering suspicion that along the way the United States might use this conflict to further its hegemony in the world.
In his New Year's Day address, the Russian president Putin said that Russia had gained new respect in the world because of its role in the fight against terrorism. Is that a view that's commonly shared, widely shared?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in some ways, the September 11th attacks was the best thing that has happened to Russian foreign policy since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Russia has, ever since it went to war against Chechnya again 2.5 years ago, argued that what it was fighting in Chechnya was not separatists, it wasn't its own people, it was international terrorism.
And now they have the blanket of the war on terrorism to share.
And now there's absolutely, you know, no way that the rest of the world can criticize them for it.
Maura, what about Russians' view of the United States in general? Do you think Russian respect for the United States has grown or fallen or stayed the same since 9/11 and the U.S. response?
I think Russians feel about the United States the way very many people feel in the United States, and that is a mixture of admiration and irritation, which may be partially jealousy. It's something like if your neighbor has a particularly beautiful house and is particularly wealthy, you might admire his, you know, business success or his architectural choice, but you wouldn't necessarily, but you'd also feel envious and, you know, might at the same time resent what he has. That's very much the way Russians feel. You must realize that they're not used to feeling this.
You're not used to feeling second class?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they very much, you know, felt like a superpower mm-hmm. when they were a superpower. They realized that at the time that they weren't quite as strong as the United States, but they were strong enough to make a very big difference in the world.
Mauro, we see in a Gallup poll that's been done globally just in the last few days that Russians actually come out there as much less supportive of the war in Afghanistan than Europeans. Russians, 50% expressing disapproval of the U.S. action there and only 39% supporting, which is half the level of some of the more supportive European countries. What do you make of that?
I think that fits right in with this Russian suspicion of American ulterior motives in Afghanistan. You have to realize that, you know, Russians were very, very much against the war in Kosovo, even though European countries were very much in favor of it. And the sense that the United States, with NATO support, goes along starting conflicts wherever they want without much thought to the consequences is a feeling that has carried over into Afghanistan.
Can you see the Russian people supporting a policy where Russia remained an ally in the war on terror as that war might be projected into other countries?
Absolutely not. I mean, particularly if the country in question turned out to be Iraq. The Russians have fairly close ties to Iraq, and whatever Russian support there is for the war on terrorism, which I think is support in principle, although wariness in practice, that I think that that would be eroded very significantly if the United States should widen the war.
And Mauro, I don't know if anyone will come to mind, but can you think of a conversation you've had with a particular Russian that illuminates the attitude there toward the U.S. war on terror?
Well, I mean, after the September 11th attacks, you know, very many Russians said what I think very many Europeans and other friends of the United States said. And things that Russians said to me at the time did not differ significantly from what my European friends said. And that was that, you know, we profoundly regret this attack on your nation. You know, we in no way endorse it or think that it's a good thing. But please, don't take, you know, think about the reasons for this. Take this as a wake-up call. There are things the United States has been doing wrong. There are things that the United States has been blind to in recent years. You know, please be smart about how you react to this event.
Mauro Reynolds is a reporter with the Los Angeles Times in Moscow. Jack, in a word, your response to our reports here from Africa and Russia?
A cooler picture here, especially from Africa, and given the U.S. history in the region, supporting the apartheid regime, Jonas Savimbi, Mobutu, one can understand why, and wariness of U.S. ulterior motives in Russia. I mean, after all, we're basing forces now in former Soviet republics.
Who wouldn't be wary? Listeners,
indeed,
we're talking about the worldview of the war on terror. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the worldview of the war on terror. Arvind is on the line. Welcome, Arvind. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First of all, wish you a very happy new year. And
same,
Jack, too.
Same to you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, to you, too.
Thank you. Basically, my father, I'm from India, and my father was, my parents had been here last year around maybe May or June, and they had spent about 20 to 25 days in this place, in Washington, D.C. mostly. And they formed such a good opinion about this place because whenever they went out, people were all very helpful and so on.
What are you hearing from them now, Arvind?
Yeah, exactly. When I called them up and, you know, after 11th, first to inform that, you know, I'm safe and so on and so forth, and I could get through, my father was absolutely shocked. In fact, he had formed such a good opinion of this place that I was telling him, Dad, America is not always so good. Sometimes it's always good. It's just like any other place.
Get a grip, Dad.
Huh?
Get a grip, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. And he's feeling, when he was in D.C., he thought that America was the best country in the world. And I was like, yeah, people are good everywhere. There are bad people, too. I mean, you shouldn't form such an opinion. But anyway, he was so sad because of that. But that's only one individual opinion, okay, my father's.
Yeah.
But on the whole, in especially in countries like India, and I've been reading more of the Pakistani newspapers because they are more affected by this directly. Mm-hmm. India has been affected by terrorism, yes, but Pakistan has been. But you can see the picture coming out from that part of the world, just like the lady from Africa was telling. Mm-hmm. But not in such drastic terms. You know, they might have greater grievances with Mobutu and so on and so forth. But even in the case of people in Pakistan or India, many of the people in my friends in India and so on, they feel that America has got a very, you know, I don't know, a militaristic stance in the sense that they think that their way of life is the best way of life and they have to, you know, impose it on everyone else and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, can I use the word pisses off? Okay, I'm used to
it. I guess you can.
Yeah, that pisses off people. I mean,
that's the irritating part. Arvind, we think we got the picture, and thank you very much for your call. Let's get one more. Pat is on the line. Pat, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. I called because I have a number of friends in Europe and elsewhere. And, of course, we all exchanged emails after bombing. It was a terrible disaster, and we were personally affected in my family, but at the same time, the overall response I got from friends from Germany was that they said to fight a war should not be the first action to be undertaken. And my friend, who is a journalist in Norway, felt very strongly and wanted me to tell Americans very much the things that she knows about Afghanistan from her expertise, that she said she's no friend of bin Laden at all, but tell them that bin Laden used to be one of the U.S.'s closest allies.
Pat, and this is a recurring theme.
Over and over again, that they want a moderate moderate response, a measured world response, not a U.S. response.
Pat, thanks so much for your call. And we hear this theme again and again, Jack. Please pay attention to the world, America. We feel sympathy for you. There's a lot about you we like, but don't be ignorant.
Don't be ignorant and don't be arrogant. You know, listening to Arvind, I was thinking of what George Bush said in the campaign. He was critical of the Clinton foreign policy. He said we needed to be more humble in relation to other countries, that we didn't have all the answers and that there wasn't just the one way to go. Bush was sort of trying to run against, in a strange way, this very active foreign policy that was intervening, in his view, too much around the world in pursuit of American values.
Jack, we've got one more call out from our friend just across the border, Rick McGinnis-Ray. He's host of the weekly foreign affairs program Dispatches on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation based in Toronto. Good evening, Rick McGinnis-Ray.
Hi there, Tom.
Hi, thanks for joining us. So you're our immediate neighbors. We're looking for your view, too, tonight. We've gone all around the globe. What are Canadians saying and thinking about the U.S. war on terror?
Well, you know, there's two sides to every issue, but because we are Canadians, there are, in fact, at least 10 here. I'll skip over giving them all to you and just try to get to those that'll move this debate along.
Please, thanks.
I'll start by saying, look, it's fair to say there has been a tremendous outpouring of sympathy and genuine affection towards you, our American neighbors, which you might consider unusual. It's in the nature of the mouse feeling sorry for the elephant, I suppose, to revive that old simile, but it remains true now more than ever that when our largest trading partner is wounded, Canada is often hurt by its rising. Mm-hmm. And even here, you know, in my leafy and usually complacent suburb, a number of American flags have suddenly appeared on poles and houses, which is definitely not something you would have ever seen before.
That must be new.
Tragedy,
that must be new.
It's not that we don't like Americans, understand. It's just that we don't want anybody to think we are Americans. But
and how about the response to 9/11, Rick McGinnis? Ray.
Well, the response has been, across the board in terms of sympathy, donations, people, you know, trying to make a difference. In New York, even to the point of visiting by the busload, by the vanload, to show some kind of solidarity with you.
I guess I mean the Canadian view of the U.S. response to those attacks.
Well, that takes on a lot of different colors. That said, you know, the United States also comes in for something of a scolding. I mean, for the collapse of its own intelligence gathering, for one thing, how could the U.S. not be aware of the tremendous anti-American feeling towards it in the radical Islamic world? You hear that a lot. Now, having covered and reported the Middle East for at least the past 10 years, it's been plain to me that the U.S. had alienated both Shiites and the Sunni Muslim majority, and how did America forget the lessons of terror learned in Lebanon so fast? I mean, the first response, and it's a typical one in a Canadian media sense here for me, was to get on the plane to the Middle East, not to ask, how do you respond in Cairo, in Beirut, in Amman, but tell me how all you things you felt over the past 10 years have come to this, because we knew you felt angry in the first place. And nothing came as a bigger surprise to us on this side of the border to flick on our televisions in those tragic first days and see American reporters saying, look, if we tried to put a story in our paper on our network about the reasons why we're disliked overseas, we'd be stoned by our own editors. This is the time for hand-holding. Questions were immediately asked about your own media and were you being well-served. The causes of this anti-Americanism will be debated for years. I mean, the Palestinian question, American support for Israel, it's only one element and often twisted to many purposes. But the anti-American clerics have been lecturing in the Saudi mosques every Friday ever since U.S. troops set foot on Saudi Arabia in the Gulf War. Gulf oil money has been moving to buy the support or silence of radical Muslim groups since then, too. How was all this missed or dismissed as distant saber-rattling that would never visit American shores? You know, in short, we have some of the same questions as you do, I expect. It's just that we've been asking them earlier, I suspect.
Rick McGinnis Ray, are the American flags still up in the Toronto suburb where you live?
Very much so, yes. They're still there, and they're being tended to. When the wind shatters them in the cold, when the wet starts to tear them at the edges, they are immediately replaced, I have to tell you.
Rick, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
You're most welcome, Tom.
Rick McGinnis Ray is host of the weekly Foreign Affairs program on the CBC Dispatches. Well, Jack Beattie, there we are. In the space of 60 minutes, we've been around the world. I hear everyone saying, United States, please, at the very least, be aware, be more aware of the world.
Yeah, that came through loud and clear. And the feeling that, you know, we had neglected even obvious intelligence lapses in the Middle East, that we weren't following what was going on, even seeing our own threats emerging. And then the other critique, that we don't see the problems of other countries. I think the world is saying, America, learn a lesson here, even though they're also deploring the means by which we were brought to this state. And I think the lesson seems to be, you know, pay attention to the world. I'm not sure that's the lesson the Bush administration, however, or many Americans are going to draw from this episode, but that remains to be seen.
Overall, I guess I'm heartened. It seems that beneath that call for awareness, that there's you hear in almost every journalist and person we talk to tonight a sense that there's an openness to the U.S. if we would just pay more attention and try and be a bit more helpful.
Yeah, and our sometimes our professions get us into trouble. You know, our professions of human rights and democracy, and then of course we sidle up to these regimes in the Middle East and who don't care for either, and who trample on them, and in Africa and elsewhere. And we don't remember those things here in the United States. We just think we're, you know, great innocents abroad.
How easily it all slides away.
Boy, but that's not the way they see it out there. Yeah, yeah. It's their lives that have been meddled with by American power, and they have a very different view, and yet with all a great affection for America and horror at this attack.
Jack, thanks for being with us this hour. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at WBUR.org. Click on Special Coverage Forums. Now, the fourth in our series of conversations with poet Robert Pinsky about poetry and conflict. Tonight, a poem about the long shadow cast by the war in Vietnam. Robert Pinsky.
The war in Vietnam certainly seems to me still the central war for my generation and for many of us still alive. Tonight, I'd like you to listen to a poem written by someone who served in Vietnam, Yusuf Komenyaka, read by Michael Lithgow, who also served in Vietnam. I believe that Yusuf was in the infantry. Michael Lithgow was a pilot. The poem and Michael Lithgow's experience of the poem involve the Vietnam Memorial. The poem is called Facing It, and I think the title alone raises part of the nature of the Vietnam War, that there have been a lot of things, including the war itself, that have been difficult and painful to face. The first words in the poem are my blackface. Yusuf is a black man. And the many fragments and schisms and fault lines in American society all were manifested in that war. And it's particularly moving, I think, to hear Michael Lithgow talk in the favorite poem video and recording about his difficulty in facing the wall itself. He had never gone to it until we asked him in the course of making the favorite poem recordings. He went to the wall and did read this poem. Let's listen to Michael Lithgow reading Yusuf Komunyakaa's poem, Facing It.
My black face fades, hiding inside the black granite. I said I wouldn't, damn it. No tears. I'm stone. I'm flesh. My clouded reflection eyes me like a bird of prey. The profile of night slanted against morning. I turn this way. The stone lets me go. I turn that way. I'm inside the Vietnam Veterans Memorial again. Depending on the light to make a difference. I go down the 58,022 names, half expecting to find my own in letters like smoke. I touch the name Andrew Johnson. I see the booby traps white flash. Names shimmer on a woman's blouse, but when she walks away, the names stay on the wall. Brush strokes flash, a red bird's wings cutting across my stare. The sky, a plane in the sky. A white vet's image floats closer to me, then his pale eyes look through mine. I'm a window. He's lost his right arm inside the stone. In the black mirror, a woman's trying to erase names. No, she's brushing a boy's hair.
Yusuf Komunyakaa's Facing It, in which a Vietnam vet faces the Vietnam Memorial. Robert Pinsky, when war is all done, does the poetry tell us whether it was a good war or a bad war?
Poetry is not punditry, Tom. Poetry doesn't necessarily take up the questions that you see people on one of the news networks taking up. Poetry tells what it feels like to a person. And poetry can say that the white vet looks through my eyes and the reflections blur over one another in the shiny black surface of the wall. And poetry can end with an image of a woman trying to erase names from the wall and then, no, she's brushing a boy's hair. And you can see things two ways. And poetry can end with that notion of a woman taking care of a boy. And since most, though not all, of the people who die in wars have been male, it's a particularly touching and suitable image, as well as a surprise, to end the poem with this ordinary little domestic detail. And Yusuf doesn't have to write an editorial about what he hopes for that boy whose hair is being brushed.
Robert Pinsky is the former U.S. Poet Laureate. To listen to other installments in our series, Poetry and Conflict, or to read poems featured in the series, visit our website at WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is Special Coverage from WBUR Boston.
This is